Welcome back to the History of South Africa podcast with me, your host, Des Latham. This is episode 72, and we're going to join Zwide of the Ndwandwe, who is often demonized in oral history, particularly by the Zulu. By the 1810s, Zwide had built up a powerful centralized kingdom and reinforced this power using his extensive family. He also formed feared Amabutho, such as the Amapela, Abahlakabezi, the Isikwicha, and the Amankaya. Most of these were around before Shaka became king of the Zulus, and the Ndwandwe were so large that they split into semi-autonomous sections, such as the Inkomalo, the Maxele, and the Pseni. At first, Zwide concentrated his raids to the north around modern-day Eswatini. The Ndwandwe attacked Sobhuza of the Dlamini Swazi, north of the Pongola River, many times, but the 1815 attack was characterized by extreme violence. Sobhuza was forced to flee along with his umuzi, and his people were almost destroyed. The description of the ill will makes little sense because Zwide had married off one of his daughters to Sobhuza. The Dlamini were already facing raids from the east, from closer to Delagoa Bay. The Ndwandwe were regarded as bandits and destabilized this part of southern Africa. Then they turned their attention further south. Zwide attacked the Kumalo people living between the Mkuzi and Waitamfulezi rivers, and eventually Donda of the Kumalo was killed by Zwide. The year 1815 has been seen as highly significant because it was then that Matawani of the Ngwani was driven out of what he thought was a well-defended area between the Bavani River and the Upper Mfolozi. Matawani relaxed after some years of building his power base, which included an alliance with the Hlubi and then the Mtetwa. Out of the blue, Zwide dispatched his men and they fell upon the Amangwani, driving them out of their homes. This moment is regarded as the first of many destabilizing events between the Tugela and the Pongola that led to a movement of people across the whole region, the subcontinent, the migration epic story called the Impitgani. Matawani's Ngwani moved away from their homes en masse, with some saying it was the renewed slave trading around Delagoa Bay that caused this, but more likely it was a growing conflict and population pressure related to resources like water, land, cattle, and women. Praise poets sing of Matawani that, if he were not found by the Ndwandwe, he would be found by the Nkomalu. Which goes to show that if you live in contested land, you'll always be fighting. Ask Ukrainians and Poles about that. All the people of KwaZulu-Natal today, where political violence is clearly being driven by pre-colonial antagonism. Matawani led large numbers of Ngwani away from their home after Zwide's defeat in 1815, and they maintained military cohesion as they went. On the way west, they fought off Zwide and eventually arrived at the home of the Hlubi, which is close to modern-day Newcastle in KwaZulu-Natal province. There was always tension between the Hlubi and the Ngwani, but the final attack by Matawani shattered the Hlubi, with one Zulu historian saying it was like breaking a bottle into 1,000 fragments. It was a izwekufa, a destruction. The area became a death zone as Hlubi people scattered in all directions. Some went north to rejoin older family members. Some headed across the Drakensberg into the Caledon Valley, led by Mpangazita Kambungani. Other Hlubi drifted further afield into Matatiel and the Eastern Cape, and some remained where they were but Khonzaed Matawani. It was the units led by the sons of the dead chief Mtumkulu, such as Mdebele, Mananga and Ntambana, who interest us. They ended up heading south and asking Shaka for protection, and it was these people who'd morph into some of Shaka's most violent shock troops, the Iziyendani Ubuto. When Shaka first took power, he didn't immediately go on the offensive, killing off people left and right, but his Zululand was actually a haven of some sort. Zwide was far busier in these early days, driving people off their land, including another Mpangazita, but his clan name was Ka Nkumbata, not to be confused with the Hlubi leader Mpangazita we just heard about. Ka Nkumbata was welcomed by Shaka and became a well-known Zulu Induna, commanding the Fasimba regiment. So by 1816, it's thought that Shaka of the Zulu and Dingiswayo of the Mtetwa were stabilizing their borders as Zwide ransacked the countryside. But both Shaka and Dingiswayo started to look south along the area between the Mhlathuzi and Tugela rivers. Starting from the uplands, the source of these rivers, and heading eastwards towards the Indian Ocean, were a chain of the southern branch of the Kumalo called the Sotholi, the Tembo, the Kunu, and the Mkize. And thus, once more, these surnames, which are so well known in South Africa, all hail from these clans. Further east towards the ocean, were the Ngqobo, and finally at the coastal end of the chain, the formidable Qwabe. However, closest were the Langeni, and there are many myths about these people. There is a legend that Shaka wanted to kill the entire Langeni because they'd bullied him, and this grew into a grand myth that he wanted to line up and slaughter everyone and then dump their bodies in the Tatiana Gorge, which sounds faintly Russian. The problem is there's no such place in Zululand, the so-called Tatiana Gorge. The truth is Shaka never tried to kill off the entire Langeni people. He incorporated them into the Zulu. His mother Nandi was of the Langeni after all. Still, the Langeni and the Zulu did have their major differences. Makedama of the Langeni was attacked by Shaka and sent some of his people to hide in the Nkandla forests, just a short hop from where I grew up. Makedama himself headed off down the Mhlathuzi River, that which flows into modern-day Richards Bay, and dug himself into stone enclosures. The Zulu impi defeated the Langeni hiding in the forest, but after three attempts gave up trying to crush Makedama in his stone fortress. There is a great story told by the Langeni. We say that Makedama sent a message to Shaka, saying that he and his people should be left alone. So the story goes like this. Shaka one day felt sorry for attacking so many of his neighbors, and gathered up the orphans of the clans he'd killed and sent them to the Mtetwa district. He'd grown up there himself, after all, and said the country was beautiful, the milk was thick and creamy, and the children would like it. So they were sent. How many? We don't know. One day a lion could be heard roaring near the orphans' cattle, and they all ran to a nearby kraal to take shelter. Hearing a lion roar during the day was unusual, so the men arrived and started to sing ceremonial songs in honor of this courageous animal. It was now their chief, they said. The lion walked around the kraal, roaring all the while. The cattle went out of the kraal and began walking off, followed by the women who packed all their belongings, and then the orphans. The men came after, and last, the lion, which trailed behind everyone. After the whole day walking at sunset, the lion moved ahead of the cattle and turned them back. Once the herd grouped, the lion pounced and killed one of the cows, but didn't eat it, leaving the dead animal for the people. This went on for the next few days, until the Langeni reached their old land near the Mhlathuzi River. Shaka was duly informed that they had arrived and selected cattle to be slaughtered in honor of the lion, but it suddenly killed a cow and ate it instead. Shaka is then supposed to have exclaimed, "Whoa, they have been fetched by their chief. I thought I was sending them to a good place, but he does not want them to leave their old lands." And so the Langeni were allowed to remain on their old lands, which is where they live to this day, along the Mhlathuzi River. Of course, this story is an allegory, another biblically symbolic tale. All that is missing is the honey, but it serves its purpose in oral history. The basic facts are true. The Langeni were allowed back by Shaka and do indeed live along the Mhlathuzi. The Langeni warriors such as Impukani Kaambanda Kazana of the Magwaza section ended up fighting for Dingaan later, while Nkazonke and Mbikwana Kaambengi, who were Nandi's brothers, Shaka's uncles, in other words, helped bring him up. When Nandi died and was buried at Kwabulawayo, the Langeni mourned, so they could hardly have been exterminated. A Langeni girl called Mbengi was in Shaka's Isigodlo. The extermination story of the Langeni is pure fantasy popularized by writers like Ryder Haggard, Morris, and E.A. Ritter. Another southern conglomerate of little groups was called the Ngqobo, and they were to cause Shaka some strife. The Qadi, Inyuswa, Ngongoma, and a couple of others were part of this conglomerate, and they were all attacked by Shaka. The Mtetwa also had a long history of trouble with the Ngqobo, particularly the Nyuswa clan. Shaka had Mgabi of the Nyuswa killed during a succession dispute, and afterwards they were kept in check by the establishment of a Zulu Mtetwa Umuzi in the form of a military outpost, which was set up amongst them called the Intontela. This morphed into a full-blooded Ibuto regiment, and all Nyuswa became Intontela. The period of instability was upon the region. The Qadi, another Ngqobo branch, conquered Shaka, but the Sotholi who lived nearby did not. It was early days. Shaka would eventually rule, but earlier on he was forced to accept the nominal independence of the Tembu, the Tunu, the Mkize, and the Qwabe. Zwide's Ndwandwe was causing much chaos around Pongola in the north. The Xunu moved southwards away from the Ngwani, and then they began their assault on the Xhubi, heading across the Tugela River to the headwaters of the Mvoti River near Greytown. Matsengwane's Xunu had fought Senzanga Khona, and he obviously regarded Shaka as a young upstart. So did the Mpongosi, the Ndlovu, and the Bayeni clans, at least initially. Matsengwane is famous for killing his own sons, although one by the name of Mfuzi escaped and asked Shaka for help. Shaka agreed. When Matsengwane sent an ox to the Zulu chief and demanded his son be killed or returned, Shaka refused, but kept the ox. The Xunu had an interesting relationship, by the way, with people living further northeast near St. Lucia Lake. A traditional leader called Mnisi lived there amongst the Gaza people, who supposedly had special powers. Matsengwane, too, had an interesting life. One of his Amabutu was called the Abatwa, and the Vatwas was the generic name given by the Portuguese at Delagoa Bay to inland marauders who'd pitch up regularly. So word got around in 1816, and here was the link once more between what was going on in Zululand and Delagoa Bay. We're not entirely certain if Matsengwane raided as far as the bay, but his impis got pretty close because the Portuguese felt the effect of the Abatwa. Shortly after Shaka's accession, within a year or so, Zwide attacked Dingiswayo. Then the land was riven by a new form of violence. At first, Shaka was defeated twice, for example, by the Ndwandwe's Amapela and Amagugu regiments, both battles taking place at Kwaqokli Hill on the White Mfolozi, that is, only 6 kilometers southwest of Ulundi in Zululand. School and even university textbooks claim Shaka defeated the Ndwandwe at Kwaqokli Hill. There is no such place. The real place is called Kwaqokli, not Kwaqokli. And Shaka was not victorious, he was defeated. It's a case of one academic slavishly following another, like the story of the Langeni being thrown into a gorge with a Russian-sounding name. Then Ndwandwe increased their raids, burning down the Zulu Mbelebeleni Imizi, as well as Shaka's own Ilawu, his personal enclosure, which was at Intontela. Shaka had to retreat across the Tugela River, things were so bad. Before he left, the oral storytellers say that he deployed a scorched earth policy. The Zulu destroyed their own fields, driving off their cattle, and they hid their grain in pits covered with hides and earth. The Ndwandwe were traveling light and, like Napoleon's army, living on what they looted, so the scorched earth decision slowed them down. Shaka deliberately avoided fighting the Ndwandwe raiding party. At least, those were his orders. Unfortunately, one of his Ubuto, led by Lukilimba, seems to have ignored this order and made the major tactical blunder of attacking Zwide's much more powerful raiding party. The Ubuto was mauled, and Shaka banished Lukilimba to the wilderness for his mistake. Lukilimba ended up in exile on the lower Mzimkulu River, living with the Mdadaza clan. But Shaka had to flee south and arrived at the Mati Tugela. It was running swiftly, and he had to swim across to the south side at Idlokweni. His troops and the cattle crossed with him, and the refugees eventually arrived at Magai, which is close to where Greytown is today. Idlokweni can't be found on a map, but if you draw a line from where he started in the Nkantle area west of Ishowe, then onwards to Magai, he would have swum over the river in the Kranskop area above Stango, or Kwadukuza as it's called. Shaka immediately went to work locally, warning the Magai and the Xele people not to touch his cattle. Then he killed Mapumulo chief Intumkulu Kadibandlela. For all of his brashness, Shaka at this point was not a successful ruler. He was on the run from the Ndwandwe and trapped between Zwide and the other large groups around the Tugela. He'd been thrown off his lands, and it was about now that he received reports that some Zulu people were talking about leaving him for either Dingiswayo or Zwide. Shaka needed to somehow increase his presence in the Nkantla forests towards the sea, near where Ishowe and that little village of Nkantla is today. It was too close to Kwabe territory to ignore, so he asked the people downstream for help. Now that Kwabe link becomes so important, we must understand that the AmaZulu were just another medium-sized group. The Kwabe were far larger. Shaka was also going to have to deal with its famous chief, Pakatwayo. Once again, the stories abound, and the richness of the descriptions need to be relayed. The Kwabe had pushed the Xele and the Tuli down the coast, and they had a dozen or more Amabuto at the ready. Some of these had been combined into a single large army, so to speak, called the Izinkonde, with prose poets exaggerating their size by saying that
If it began to enter the Umuzi in the morning, it would take until sunset to pass through.
Pacatwayo made the fatal mistake of underestimating Shaka, but given his multiple regiments, he could be forgiven for doing so. Pacatwayo's Umuzi included the Isikana, the Zilinda, the Ubedi, the Imtandeni, Itoyeyeni, the Idideni, the Elekezeni, the Maganukeni, and the Udwini. Pacatwayo also made the mistake of failing to shore up internal rifts. There were others in the Kwabe who wanted him gone. They, like most of the larger entities in Zululand, were really a conglomeration of foreigners, a welding of lineages which centralized power, sometimes through false lineages. This meant there was quite a bit of whispering going on behind Pacatwayo's back about who really should be ruling that Kwabe. The Makanya Kwabe south of the Chigela were a junior lineage who believed they were the senior. The Makanya jumped over royalty, was the allegation. Before Shaka arrived, Makanya had fought with Pacatwayo, who then crossed the Chigela to teach him a lesson. Makanya fought him off. Then Pacatwayo attacked his own brother, Normo, and lost again. The irony was their father, Kondlo, was still alive and had nominated Normo as his heir. But Normo's mother was an Mtetwa, a sister of Dingiswayo, and the Kwabe thought Normo should not be chief. He wasn't proper Kwabe blood. Normo was duly chased off. The Mtetwa tried to help but failed. Then he pitched up at Shaka's home asking for refuge. Meanwhile, Pacatwayo's other brothers were muttering in their Imizi about all the goings-on. This epic story was heading to its climax. So, in around 1817, Shaka was in Pacatwayo's backyard, having fled the Ndwandwe, and he asked the Kwabe leader for grain. Others say the argument that was going to take place revolved around beads, those all-important items of trade we've heard about. There are many, many stories about what happened next. I'm going to relate them because each is descriptive, suggestive, colourful and symbolic. But right now we must halt for the night and light a fire to chase away the hyena and the lion and the leopard. Next we'll hear about Pacatwayo's fate and then return to the Cape. It's the second decade of the 19th century and all sorts of madness is about to strike the Albany area around Grahamstown. Please rate the podcast on iTunes if you have the time. It helps make the series more visible. If you have any comments or want to contact me, you can use the website desmondlatham.blog or desmondlatham.com. I'm also on Twitter. You can direct message me there @deslatham. Until next.